Man, this aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that Pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whitening. I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Can you please come in?
Point of order.
Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack the big political stories of the week. My name is Mike Siluma. And my guests this week are Sibonga Konke Shoba, who's the Sunday Times Politics Editor, Andisiwe Makinana, who's a political correspondent based in Cape Town, and as well as political journalist Mawande Amashabalala. For this week, for the first segment of our conversation, we are also being joined by Andre Gaum, who is a commissioner at the Human Rights Commission. This week on Politics Weekly, we start in Cape Town again, where clashes happened between members of the EFF and some parents of Brackenfell High School over a racially exclusive matric year-end party, apparently. We'll also be talking about the case of ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule, who's been charged with corruption. This is a case that will have major political implications, not just for the ANC, but also for the country. But first, let's go to Cape Town.
Brackenfell High School in the Western Cape is a talking point across the country as scores of South Africans weigh in on a confrontation which took place outside the school on Monday. EFF supporters demonstrated outside the school after it emerged that parents had organized an unofficial private matric ball, which was attended exclusively by white pupils and two teachers. The school had cancelled the official event due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Speaking during his visit to Brackenfell High, Premier Alan Wunder said the following.
Obviously what we've been seeing, what's been happening over the last few days, the Minister and I have just had a meeting with the school principal as well as the governing body chair. I've also had engagement with the police commissioner last night, and of course the police that's in charge here at the moment. Obviously, they have set up some pretty strict protocols on perimeter management. And of course, at the end of the day, for me, we have to allow the learners to complete the year, specifically the matrix. They need to be able to do it safely. These kind of disruptions are not acceptable when matrix have had a really disruptive year as it is. COVID-19 has put so much pressure on anybody trying to finish their final exams. And so my message as well is that to the EFF, you may not come and disrupt this community. You need to stay out. We need to keep the politics away from this school right now, and we need to give the learners every single opportunity for them to complete their year.
In a statement from the EFF, the following was said. The Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, condemns the attacks conducted by armed white racists against EFF members who held a peaceful protest outside Brackenfell High School in Cape Town. Armed right-wingers attacked EFF members, undermining their constitutional right to protest and assaulting them physically. Gunshots were fired, police officers were manhandled. This was all done in defense of racism, as the learners and parents of the school held an only white matriculant party, which the principal of the school and two teachers attended. These terror attacks will not go unanswered. The EFF will descend on Brackenfell in its entirety and ensure that nothing operates. Ex-pupil from Brackenfell High School shared his views when he said the following.
Ex-student at Brackenfell High, and my brother also studied here. My nephew and my niece are studying there at the moment. We have never experienced any form of racism at the school. We are actually quite sad that somebody decided to go and publish lies about the school. So as ex-black student myself, I tend to show my support for the school.
In a separate statement, President Cyril Ramaphosa has called for restraint in Brackenfell. At this moment, important and difficult time for matriculants, not only at Brackenfell High School, but around the country, the spectacle of parents and protesters coming to blows at the school gate is deeply unfortunate. It is the right of every South African to engage in peaceful protest, and any actions to suppress the right to freedom of expression, particularly through violence and intimidation, must be roundly condemned. Allegations of racism leveled against the school need to be urgently investigated. we should be ever mindful of the extent to which our actions, both publicly and in private, undermine the cherished principle of non-racialism upon which our democracy was founded. The President has called on all parties concerned to exercise restraint and to resolve their differences peacefully and through dialogue. For Multimedia Live, I'm Amina Deka Asma. Sound collected by Essa Alexander.
Sibonga konke shoba, you follow politics a lot in the country. What does this conflict tell us about race relations in that school, but also in society generally?
It tells you that we, as a country, we have so far failed to deal with the racial tension that has been there since 1994. And people who know Cape Town very well, they know the area around that school, that it used to be an exclusively white area. And then as time went by, other races started moving in. But there is, it's a well-known fact from people who live in Cape Town about the racial tension that has been there. And it says a lot about the leadership that we have. If you look at the response to this incident, and you saw the response from the MEC of Education in the Western Cape saying that what's wrong with having a white-only private party? It tells you that we are very far. As a country with a leadership like that, we are very far as a country from resolving such issues. We're supposed to get a leadership that unites us, the leadership that comes in and give us a way forward on how to deal with the issues. But it seems the responses that we've been getting so far have just been taking us a few steps back.
Mm. Andragam, I'd like for you to come in here. You are a commissioner at the Human Rights Commission. And Sibonga Konke is raising the question of, you know, he is repeating the question that was that he's alluding to, the question that was raised by the MEC for Education, you know, in the Western Cape, who's asking what is wrong with having a racially exclusive social. At what point does it become unacceptable to have a racially exclusive social gathering?
Yeah, let me maybe start by saying that the South African Human Rights Commission has opened an own initiative investigation both into the allegations of unfair discrimination pertaining to this function, the matric function that took place, which is claimed to be a racially segregated private event, as well as pertaining to the violence that occurred outside the school. Now, I think that we're still in the early ages of this investigation, at the early stage, should I rather say, and we will make sure that we get to the bottom of the facts here involved. Some of the questions are obviously, how was this event organized? What did the invitations look like? Who were invited and who not and why? There's the allegation that two teachers attended the event. We need to look into that. We also need to have conversations with learners, educators. Our officials have already visited the school on Tuesday and had discussions with the principal and the chairperson of the school governing body, in which we also conveyed that there might be a necessity for some sensitivity and diversity training at the school, and the chair of the school governing body said that the governing body will indeed consider that. But yes, to come back to your question, I think the main issue here is, you know, to what extent was the school involved? It is also a matter of a matric class that couldn't have their farewell, and now a separate event was indeed arranged for that particular group, the matric class. So already there is, in that respect, some kind of an association between the school, you know, and the event.
But I was asking, Andre, I was asking more specifically as to you know, at what point does it constitute racism to meet socially with people of the same racial group? And at what point, you know, that does that become racism? In other words, where does racism start and where does a social gathering end?
Yes, I think the best way to explain it is, you know, one will have to refer to the context in which this takes place. So, for example, if it's within a school environment set up where certain people are invited only because of their race, others not, you know, then it most definitely goes beyond the private sphere. If you would happen to want to invite people for dinner, you know, in that particular sphere, one wouldn't be able to say, but, you know, why, for example, did you not invite white or Indian people, whatever the case may be? So there is that clear difference between that kind of public sphere, for example, within your home, and then the sphere where there's clear differentiation that takes place on one of the prohibited grounds, and there is no justification for that particular differentiation.
Yeah, Mohand, I'd like for you to come in here. You heard Andre mentioning the possible need or consideration of diversity training. So some people say, you know what, how long are we going to be training people on diversity in this country, you know, after 25 years, you know, of freedom, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, what's your view? I mean, do you think that it's an important thing to do, or do you think that maybe we should be approaching the problems of racism differently?
Mm. Well, Bramai, first of all, for me, really, let me just take it back a bit. On the issue of social gatherings, the question that you ask, why should people be forbidden in social gatherings? Well, of course, this is a bit different because it's a schooling situation, which is a public institution. So, but as a general rule, for me, I'm not that much concerned about who people in issues of social gatherings where they are having fun, they choose to associate with. For me, that really doesn't bother me, and I would say perhaps calling such racism is a bit overreaching, in my opinion. That's just my personal opinion, because I doubt it would have anything to do with disenfranchising someone by choosing to drink. Let me just make an example. If I choose to drink with so-and-so instead of so-and-so. For me, there are much bigger issues whereby we should focus this conversation about racism too. But as I said, this is a little bit of a different situation in that it's a public institution, and we don't, I believe, have the full facts yet as to why it happened in that way, where the you know, black pupils, apart from doing their own, had they wanted to do so. Was this a school event? Was it organized by the school? Or was it organized by a group of people who thought it would be okay to socialize together? So those are the issues for me. So I'm not really... On coming back to your question of diversity, people shouldn't be taught about diversity. I think we live in a diverse country enough, and people should learn to understand that we've got different cultures here. But as I said, I still feel people on socializing have got an option to socialize with whoever they deem a fit for whatever that social gathering is. But diversity as a generic issue on serious issues like in the workplace, in the economy, those are things that ought to be considered. They are non-negotiable. But on social issues, really for me, it's neither here nor there. If white people gather, only white people gather together, or black people gather together, colored people gather together without the others, it's neither here nor there for me, really.
But if I invite people in a common environment and I say I only want black people and no white people must come to my party, would that be acceptable in your view?
To me, it is acceptable. If it's a social event, you are well within your rights, especially, as I say, if it's not within a public institution. If I do a party at my place and I decide that I'm inviting white people only, I believe that it's a personal right that I have to who I mingle with, who I drink with. It's neither here nor there. It's like any other issue. For instance, let's take out the race. If I do a party at my place, I'll surely only invite my friends. And if you come in uninvited, I will tell you to leave, because you were not invited.
Not a friend.
Exactly. It's not now. Yeah. It's not even about race. You look like me. We are both black, but because you are not invited,
but you still reserve the right to choose.
So because there's also the element of private functions.
Yeah.
If it's a private function, it's an event that you do on your own, and you decide who must come to it. Mm-hmm. And if you decided to invite certain people in a private event, private social event, really, it's neither here nor there for people to say, I'm being chased because I'm white, I'm being chased because I'm black. Yeah. I think when we start involving issues like that in social private gatherings, I think we are a bit reaching in classifying such events as racism.
Yeah, yeah. Andrew Gam, before you leave us, you know, I wanted to ask you this, you know, do you think that we've done enough as a country to deal with racism? You know, because it looks to me that from time to time it comes up, and then there's a period of quiet, and then it comes back again. You know, so do you think we've done enough to deal with it?
I don't think so at all, and I think the education environment is a very important environment to deal with these matters. And therefore, you know, we've seen a number of these incidents, some of which did amount to unfair discrimination, some not. We had the issues pertaining to a black principal being appointed in El Dorado Park, and also feelings of marginalization and exclusion related to that coming from the colored community. We've seen the hair issues at Victoria Hills High, etc. And in terms of the complaints that the Human Rights Commission receive, race-based complaints make up most of the equality complaints we actually receive. And we mostly receive equality-related complaints. So no, much more need to be done. I think we should also acknowledge what has been done, and there were various initiatives. For example, in collaboration with the Department of Basic Education, the Commission worked to develop new textbooks for the life orientation phase that will be phased in shortly. All with a human rights perspective. So in terms of the curriculum, that's a pertinent intervention. We also run the school moot court competition, and all grade 10s now, as a compulsory part of the English curriculum, they have to write an issue on the moot court question, which is often equality related. But I think more needs to be done, and we are also considering talks from our side, based on media reports, but also on complaints we receive, and because of the importance that the culture of human rights is fostered in our schools, maybe, you know, to have a larger inquiry into the matter of unfair discrimination in our schools. It's also a very interesting debate that you had pertaining to the issue of, it's basically, you know, in some instances, the Bill of Rights only have so-called vertical, it works vertically between the state and its citizens, but in other instances, there is also the horizontal application. And yes, there is the private sphere, but sometimes, for example, we involved now in a case against Beloftebos, a wedding venue that refused same-sex couples to get married there. That is a private institution, but because of the what we regard to be unfair discrimination and the involvement then in refusing access to people from the larger public, we are taking that venue to the Equality Court. So, it's a very interesting debate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Andrew Graham, we would like to thank you very much for joining us on Politics Weekly to give us your very interesting perspectives. We hope to talk to you again soonish. And as you leave us, we will take a break and return to look at developments around the ANC Secretary General Ace Magashule following his corruption charges, which were announced during the course of the week. He is, of course, the most senior ANC leader facing charges in court at the moment.
Would I buy a Hummer?
But you see, like, you can't beat the diesel.
I'll take the petrol over the diesel any day.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. you can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course, have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative, only on Times Live Motoring.
Welcome back to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly. The preference of corruption charges against Ace Magashule, the ANC Secretary General, is arguably the biggest political story of the week. And I'd like to start here with Mawande Mashabalala. What does this story, this development tell us, you know, from where you're sitting, Mawande?
Well, for me, Bramike, I'll prefer to talk politics. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to talk legal issues. I'll talk politics. For me, in the politics within the ANC, what this means, it means from this point on, I know people see it the other way around, that the ACE will be much more powerful than the ANC president, Cyril Ramaphosa. I actually beg to differ. For me, it means going forward, especially to the 2022 conference of the ANC, its current president, Cyril Ramaphosa, whom we know, does not see eye to eye with the Secretary General. In fact, they are on polar opposite fronts. Is going to have much more power within the ANC going forward to that conference, which puts him at an advantage to emerge for a second term in 2022. We know that there's been a lot of pushback against his leadership within the ANC that is ran on a day-to-day basis by Secretary General Ace Magashule, who will now have to invest more time focusing on his legal woes, and that may defocus him in terms of organizing structures of the ANC towards whatever he wanted to achieve in 2022 elections. You'll remember he's famous for his only 5 years term. So he made it clear right from day one that he was not interested in supporting a second term of the ANC president, Cyril Ramaphosa. So for me, really the bigger battle is about that fight of who gets to move forward with the ANC, between the two of them in particular. Of course, factions have got many other people, but the main players in these two factions are the two of them. And if Ace remained untainted throughout this time and remained in control of the structures of the ANC, definitely he would mount a formidable fight in 2022 against the sitting president and possibly unseat him and maybe install himself or a candidate preferred by him. But as things stand, that plan might have been disorganized by him now having these legal woes, and especially in line with the resolution of the ANC that said people who have been charged must step aside, which we don't know how it's going to be implicated. It's actually quite a headache, as we have seen that up to this stage, there is no indication as to whether he will be forced to step aside, not resign, step aside until he resolves his legal problems, or the NSC is going to renege on its resolution that people who are charged must step aside. So it's quite interesting to watch, but for me, really, it tells me something big is coming in the coming years.
Okay. Sibongakonke Shoba, Umawande is talking about a resolution, about people stepping aside. And the more I try to understand this resolution, the muddier it becomes in my head. How clear is it as to what, you know, what's supposed to happen when?
Even people who sit in the NEC, Bramaika, as confused as you are. It's clear as mud how this resolution is going to be implemented. So there was a big fight in the NEC in the past several meetings that they had around how do you implement this rule, because it was part of the resolutions taken at Nazareth. They've been fighting about it ever since. So what we know now is that the Luthuli House is now working on the details of how it's going to be implemented. They have got the services of attorneys who are assisting them in putting in the legalities of how you can implement such a rule. And then that whatever recommendation coming from the top leader of the ANC will have to go back to the NEC And I tell you, Bramike, there will be another fight at the NEC around the recommendations of the top six. And I don't see them coming up with a clear resolution of how it should be it should be implemented, precisely because they are implicated in wrongdoing. The large number of people who are supposed to take a decision around this issue are implicated in one way or another in wrongdoing. So both factions will keep on fighting about how they implement this rule. And I don't see us, I don't see them coming to a conclusion that will take us forward.
Hey, and this way, do you want to come in here? You know, I was seriously underwhelmed by the statement that was issued after the top six meeting in terms of the Ace Magashule issue. If you are a betting person, which I presume you are not, but if you were a betting person, would you bet on Ace Magashule stepping aside or stepping down or stepping out or staying put? What do you think he's going to do?
Well, I would bet that Ace is very unlikely to step aside. As my colleagues have said, the ANC has still not even defined what stepping aside means. So when he came out in August talking about a resolution for people who are charged to step aside, obviously there were people that were already charged. And we all thought they would be long gone by now, but they all, I think with the exception of one person, everybody else remains in their positions because the party has not even defined what it means to step aside. So I think it's very unlikely. Ace Magashule is the man who is supposed to enforce that resolution. So if he couldn't do it with others, what are the chances that he would then apply it on himself? I don't see it happening, Pramike. But also, if I may add another dimension to this conversation, you know, the ANC people were singing Zizo Chiki Zinto when they were going to the 2017 conference. I think things are indeed changing.
They are indeed jigging.
They are indeed jigging, because who would have thought that a Secretary General of the ANC would be charged in 2020 for a contract from 2014? I don't think such would have happened before 2017. So as much as we would like to see lots of people in jail for a lot of things, and we've been complaining that the law enforcement agencies have been failing South Africans, but, you know, they are triggering these things little by little. The fact that there is now a warrant and people will go to court and answer for the alleged crimes, you know, it's a step in the right direction. I just wanted to add that.
Okay. And you know what? I'd like us to wrap up here, but I'm going to do just a one round I'd like for you to look into your crystal balls. And tell me what you think is going to happen. The president, Cyril Ramaphosa, should he continue on this path of accepting that people can stay in place until they've been found guilty in a court of law, or should he be insisting on ethical behavior by ANC leaders, irrespective of the legalities of the thing? Which way should he be going? And so while you are on the stage, maybe you should kick us off on that as you round off.
Yeah, look, I wish the president could do as little as possible, because remember with former President Zuma, a lot of the issues against him were, there were a lot of issues around the then President Mbeki allegedly interfering with state agencies, and that's why today it's really difficult still to answer a lot of questions around the so-called spy tapes and so on. So I wish Ramaphosa could just continue with his job, do as little as possible, and just allow the law enforcement agencies to do their work as far as these things are concerned. Maybe when he's wearing his other cap as the ANC president, they could, as soon as possible, define what stepping aside means. But I'm really not concerned about people stepping aside in their roles in the ANC, but I'm more concerned about what happens with people who are holding office in the state or in state entities.
Okay. In less than 30 seconds, should the ANC be pursuing a legalistic or an ethical approach to leaders who do wrong or who are accused of doing wrong?
They should be approaching an ethical approach, because it's not about proving one's guilt. It's also about protecting the party's image. So if you have a Secretary General who's accused of corruption, it is the same Secretary General who's going to go and conduct door-to-door asking for people to vote for that party. And it doesn't augur well for the party's image. And I just wanted to add to what Andisa was talking about is that you spoke about, can Cyril Ramaphosa do more? Can he insist that people step aside? I'm saying to you, he won't win that battle. For an example, the VBS matter, there was an NEC decision that people who were involved there step aside. The same NEC came back and changed that decision. He was sitting there in that meeting. He disagreed with that decision, but the majority view won the day. Who in that majority view voted or sided with that view? It included his own supporters who said, no, there's nothing wrong with reinstating these people back to their position. So I'm saying, given the fact that most of those leaders in the ANC have one scandal or another or one allegation against them or another, they will not allow a situation where they are all forced to step aside.
Okay. Mawanda Mashabalal, the last word goes to you in less than 30 seconds.
Okay, thanks, Brother Mike. No, you know, on the issue of ethical versus legal, I have a different view. You know, because there's a danger in elevating the ethical approach against a legal approach, in that you run a risk of creating a sort of a kangaroo court type of a situation in your organization. For instance, Mr. Shoba is correct by saying most of them, I would argue to say all of them in the ANC, NEC have got one allegation or that against each other. All of them in the future may stand accused in a court of law of one wrongdoing or the other. What then happens in a situation like that, where sometimes these things may not really, in a court of law, which may run over 3 or 4 years, it ends up with you being acquitted, whereas you were treated with an ethical card. And also the other thing, in terms of a society at large, you promote a culture of saying by you are guilty by accusation, you are guilty by allegation, whereas we also claim to be a country that reigns, where the law reigns supreme.
So your preference is what? Between ethics and legality.
It's the balance of the two. But the ANC as is, it is broken beyond repair on the ethical front, from membership at branch level right up to the top six. It is rotten, and you can never win with the ethical approach in an organization like that. The ANC has got to rebuild itself, rebuild its credibility, rebuild its values from scratch, and then you can be able then to elevate the ethical card ahead of everything else. But in the case that it is, it is likely to create more chaos if the ANC chooses the route of elevating ethical against legal. I think at the moment what they can do is to find the balance between the two, because the danger is that it may spill over to society, where people may just be accused. I may be accused standing here and Sunday Times is told to suspend me because someone somewhere who hates me for whatever reason accused me of a certain thing. So I think those are the other issues that we ought to look at as we look broadly into these issues. Of course, not to say I promote wrongdoing in society. People who do wrong must be pursued via the proper processes. In particular, as I say, the law remains supreme in the country generally, but an organization has got to have its own control system. But as I say, the ANC as is, for me, it will never be able to apply an ethical approach given the rot that is within the party and its membership as a whole.
Folks, unfortunately, that's all we have time for on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly this week. And I'd like to thank my guests, Andisiwe Makinana, political correspondent in Cape Town, political journalist Mawande Amashabalala, Usbonga Gonke, Wawashova, our politics editor, as well, of course, as Andre Gum from the Human Rights Commission. And by the way, catch our podcast on iono.fm, Spotify, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to get your podcasts. Until next time, stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places. I'm Mike Siluma, signing off.